Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, my friends, to Where the Music Never Ends. We're so glad for all your minds that we find, Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Late Night Poets Rhythm and Rhyme Show. We are part of the world's largest community. That's allpoetry.com, and there you shall find us, the Late Night Poets. We put these radio shows on 7 nights a week, Monday through Sunday, 10 p.m. till midnight. Come hang with our wild WU in Nature and Passion on Mondays. Dig into the twisted thoughts of the Twisted Sisters on Twisted Tuesdays. Early Wednesday, 1 p.m., join us for Keeping It Brief. And then Wednesday evening, turn up the heat with the Art of Seduction. Thursdays are split between In Our Craft or Selling Art with Richard and Double Helix, Richard and Neutron and Double Helix with a Phase Gannett and Dex. Friday, Come Fill My Eyes with Open Poetry. Saturday, split between Gray Eyes Howling at the Moon in the Canadian Wilds, bringing you Bad Company, and Exploring Aphasia with Captain B2 and Dan. And if you're looking for a little more edgier realm, then please check out our After Midnight shows, 12:30 to 2:30 a.m., Tuesday through Sunday morning. So, Tuesday, take a walk on the wild side. Thursdays, join Jeremy as he brings you the headliner's ball. Friday, break on through with Pam. Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And every other Sunday, join Robert M. as he brings you the solace of shadows. Check out the contests and prompts for our shows. Call in to read your poems and hang for the fun. Good evening, Jean. How you doing?
Hey, Rex, how are you tonight? Very good, very good. Pam, you there?
She's mutating.
Must be. Okay. Well, I'm doing good, Rex. How are you? Everything going well?
Weather's nice. My cayennes are full blooming, so I should have some
nice
stuff.
Nice. That sounds wonderful. Nothing like some hot peppers. Yeah, add a little spice to the day.
All I got to do is pick them, dry them out a little, and smoke them.
Sounds good. Sounds very, very good. Nice. Yeah. So tell us about your show tonight.
Well, I took Knife Edge, the song I used to open up After Midnight. I just couldn't resist the lyrics. It's almost 3 years now, so it's time to use those lyrics as a little foundation point for having a bit of fun, whether picking out a single line, a stanza, mixing and matching. It didn't really matter, just as long as somebody was able to dig something out that they can express with. And it really is a great song. It's 52 years old now. Came off Emerson, Lake & Palmer's first album. And it really is, if you look into the words themselves, not only the touch abstract, but surreal. And it does offer up a world of a macabre world, almost dystopian in its thought.
Right. Very cool. Very cool. Well, it looks like you had a good turnout from it. Decent show ahead of us, I can tell, as always. And just in case you needed to know, we have Randy G on the line. Welcome aboard, Randy.
Hello, Phil. Hello, Rex.
Hey, Randy. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
It's all good. All good. Except for we lost Pam somewhere. I hope she didn't fall off the bumper when we hit that last rut back there.
You actually didn't lose me. I just didn't realize I was on mute, and by the time I realized that the conversation had moved on, so I didn't think there was any point in announcing it.
there you go. No, I just thought maybe we lost you somewhere. Weird things happen on the phone line sometimes. Good to have you with us, Pam. Absolutely. How you been?
Good to be here.
Yeah. Okie doke. Yeah. Rex, whatever you want to do, you just tell me. I'll get right on it.
The first two are from last week's free-for-all. So we can go with those, get them out of the way, and then we can dip into this week's knife edge.
Awesome. Okay, that's what we'll do then. Pam, I'm going to ask you to read the first. Well, no, I'll ask Rex. No, Rex, I want you to read this. What am I talking about? Oh, here we go again. I get on here and I start getting all confused. Oh, God.
You let Eugene out of the bag early.
I think I did. It's kind of whiskey, I'm telling you. Okay, Rex, I put that one up for you, what I'm doing.
Right. This one's called Weather Vane, lyrics SVR. This was a tribute piece by Penn Allen to Stevie Ray Vaughan, who she picked for her thoughts for last week's free form. December at the Orpheum, where I belonged and came from, I took my man's son to blues podium. 1989 Requiem, before Texan was called upon to cop the crash in Wisconsin. Stevie Ray Vaughan is gone, in chopper blade goodbye. He fell fast from the sky. It was his time to die. I never knew or understood. I must catch him if I could, but somehow was struck I should hear him live while getting was good. Red velvet shocked off son's boyhood, and double trouble brought heartwood. Stevie Ray Vaughan is gone, as black hurricane bane rattlesnakes, weather vane, a guitar riff goes insane. I got lost in the sound of blues, ripping down red carpet clues, where bikers' boots and cues sucking out breaths of smoked fuse. The suit stripped down to news, martini news in favor of bruise. Stevie Ray Vaughan is gone. I saw him in his prime, before flipping toss of a dime, stole reason from rhyme. And poem. I like that. All right, Pam, since you were late coming in, because you were mutating, you got to lead off.
Well, that seems like a lame reason for me to lead off, but sure, what the heck. No, I really liked this. It was a wonderful tribute to, Stevie Ray Vaughan and his talent. And I like how she wrote about how she wanted to introduce her son to the experience of enjoying his music, of enjoying a live show. And I really like this all the way through, but especially Stevie Ray Vaughan is gone, as black hurricane bane rattles, snake weather vane, and guitar riff goes insane. I get lost in the sound of blues ripping down red carpet clues. All the way through, that whole stanza there is just absolutely amazing. So a wonderful tribute and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Randy, how about you?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think it was a very, very well done tribute to Steve Ray Vaughan. I happen to be a blues fan myself, and I appreciate his guitar playing. And I especially like that stanza. I got lost in the sound of blues, ripping down red carpet clues, where bikers' boots and cues suckered out breaths of smoke fused. The suit stripped down to lose, martini muse in favor of bruise. The last two lines are especially, the blues have a way of cutting across the lines of our society so that people in suits can strip down and lose martini muse in favor of bruise. Suits and blue jeans and leather jackets all mixed together, listening to the blues. So I just thought that was a really nice touch. But, yeah, I like the whole poem very well.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. And, Jean, how about you?
Well, I thought it was a nicely penned piece. And I also thought it was a great tribute to Stevie Ray Vaughan. Great story told and the details throughout. I really enjoyed it. So thank you, Penn, for sharing with us. Excellent.
Excellent. Thank you. I took that stance you guys picked out. I like that too. Not just for what was in it, but the fact that it went full monoline, like another stanza up two spaces, also went monoline. Kind of hit a nice note with that. But the blues, the clues, the cues, the fuse to lose. And I did like the extra martini muse in favor of blues. Like you said, Randy, blues did cross all manner of sport, right down to the bikers that got written in here, to the people who preferred martinis over beers. But when you're at a place like this, you got to stick in with the company and enjoy what you got there, and that is definitely a beer. And I remember this. He just finished a show with Clapton, and they were all getting on helicopters to head on into Chicago for another show the next day, except Stevie's never made it, unfortunately. Went down in some massive fog, I think it was. So, nicely done, Ken. Thank you very much for the entry. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, Dean, coming back your way.
You know, well, Pam, I have the next one up for you from Back to Life called Tell It to My Mind.
All right. Tell It to My Mind by Back to Life. My heart, tell it to my mind. My heart already knows. I feel like my mind's going to explode trying to understand her. How do I decipher emotion? I can remember. Is there a secret code to get to know her better? I thought we knew each other, baby, baby, baby. I thought you are my lady. I still love to live to be your man. Lady, 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 help me to understand. Show me, show me, show me, baby. Maybe it's crazy, but lady, just maybe you'd like to get to know me. So tell it to my mind. My heart already knows. I don't ever remember breaking up. Hold on, let me blow my nose. Crazy lady, as far as I can feel, you're still my one and only. Has my lady really been gone that long? Tell it to my brain. I haven't been the same. I can feel her presence sometimes. This wedding band she gave me back reminds me of an angel. I once made eye contact. And once upon a time, a man held a miracle, and a miracle once held him back. So as long as I still have internet, these foolish rhymes I keep writing, sending my love to you in a poem, hoping that you love me back. If you weren't here by my side, I would hold you. And if you look in my eyes, you can see that I love you. I would hang on to your every word, and I'm left hanging, dangling, strangling my mind, not understanding. Tell it to my mind, my heart already knows. Left here standing all alone. I'm always here for you, your home. Can always be here with me. Everything I do just for you. I wish you would just come back home. My heart is broken and already knows. My brain is stuck. My wife can't you tell it, driving me insane. Tell it to my mind. My heart already knows. Memories I kneel and pray for. Hold on, let me blow my nose. And when I get there, then I press play, watch over and over, and then I hit rewind. OMG, look at that time. I don't know, is it really over? No, 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 so. Tell it to my mind, my heart already knows. Be right back, coming soon. Verse 2, hold on, let me blow my nose. But yeah, baby, I never really wanted you to leave. How long have you been gone? OMG, I can't believe. But I'm trying my hardest to remember what it's December, I don't know. But I said no, I want you to go, and if you want to stay, please stay forever. I don't mind if you never look my way, my love. I wish just having you here was enough. And now, and I know I was never right, and I'll admit that you were never wrong. A million things running through my mind to freestyle it up as I went along. And though I felt you treated me like a child, I didn't know that what I was doing either were wild. But just so you know, I'm going to cry every time at night. Now when I think of you, I need to pray for a miracle. I need you here with me. I need to pray for a miracle. I need you here with me. So tell it to my mind. My heart already knows. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Back to Life. So, okay, what's it? Taylor Dane's Tell It to My Heart and Mike and the Mechanics' All I Need is a Miracle as inspiration. All right, Randy, why don't you lead us off? What do you think?
Well, it was a, excuse me, a, it was rather long, and you know, it felt, I don't know if it was real feelings from the heart of the poet or not, but it certainly came across that way, as though, you know, from someone who was very hurt, who had lost a wife, and Mr. So had made a mistake, and, you know, what it all boils down to, and I thought, was the gist of the whole poem, and it was very simple but very profound. Just tell it to my mind, my heart already knows. I think that says a lot and probably applies to many of us. So yeah, I thought it was a pretty interesting poem. I liked it.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was nicely done and a great take on the chosen prompt. It was a sad tale of lost love. And I want to thank Back to Life for sharing that with all of us throughout the whole radio program. Nicely done, and thanks.
Thank you, Jean. And mm-hmm. Man, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I thought it was a emotive write on the idea of missing somebody after a separation or divorce, and how all the turmoil and the thoughts that that you go through as you're dealing with this heartbreak. I also like how in the middle of this extremely long poem, he gave us a warning that there was still more to come. So, you know, I was prepared. it's the emotion within it is very palatable, very relatable, I like how he says, hoping that you love me back. If you were here by my side, I would hold you and look in your eyes. You can see that I love you. Nicely written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And I got to agree with Randy. This does come across as a something real, or maybe a real played along some other lines, because it does hit on the note of being young and wild. So that might have a bit to do with it, but it also admits it to the angle of being foolish and not knowing what he wanted and noticing that when it was gone, the realization wakes him up to the fact that, yeah, she was what I wanted, that angel that I hadn't, didn't pay much or enough attention to, and she found a way of, hey, you know what, I'm on my way, and he's kind of feeling the blues. It's very sad. It's got a heavy melancholy tone to it, and that sort of hope still resides, but it kind of hits on as those last two lines walk. So, tell it to my mind, my heart already knows. There's almost an admission there. I can't tell it to myself. I need confirmation that it's done. So please tell me, help me out with this so I can move on, because the heart already knows, but the mind doesn't want to admit to it. Nicely done, Beck. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're coming back your way.
Okay, well, we're approaching that half-hour mark, so I'm going to put Randy's piece up next.
Okay, okay.
This is Razor's Edge by Randy G. So whenever you're ready, Randy.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, this is just the thoughts that came to me when I read the lyrics of the song that was your prompt. So the name of it is Razor's Edge. The sad man takes a very thoughtful step, and while looking down, he carefully crept closer to the Silver King's Theater of Folly, as a seagull's flight seemed so melancholy. A lone eagle flies with its spread claws, this spectacle just giving everyone pause. We are contemplating our precarious view. Stare into the abyss, it will stare into you, and reveal what is the cruelest madness. Quickly explaining the sad man's sadness, his streets turn into wet marshy shallows, which all lead toward the reaper's gallows. Questioning who you are, battling reason, balancing sanity against a moral treason, and Counting Callous, a charlatan's pledge, a tightrope artist living on a razor's edge, end poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, I really like this one. I really feel like within this wonderfully metered rhyme, you perfectly captured the essence of the lyrics. I like how this is that idea of looking at somebody who's struggling to keep balance in life, who's struggling with madness, only it's become a spectator sport. And to me, it's a representation of the idea that we love, whether it's on social media or so-called reality TV shows, or even people, like, it's the idea of how people always have to stare at a car crash. They can't help but want to capture everyone else's cruelty and madness and suffering for their own amusement. And I really like this all the way through, but the third stanza with, and reveal what is the cruelest madness, quickly explain the sad man's sadness as streets turn into wet, marshy shallows, which all lead toward the reaper's gallows, was the one that spoke strongest to me. So really great, right, Randy? Very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Nicely said, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was excellent, Randy. I thought it was really fantastic. I thought it was awesome work, and I very much enjoyed wonderful rhyme and imagery throughout, and I love these lines. A lonely eagle flies with its spread claws, the spectacle just giving everyone pause. We are contemplating our precarious view, staring to the abyss, and it will stare into you. I thought that was a wonderful stanza. But I do have to say all the stanzas were great, and I really enjoyed it. So thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you, Phil.
All right, Randy. I like what you kind of went through the whole song, and you picked out words that kind of sat and took up notice with you. Like you've got Sad Man, you've got the Silver Kings, the Seagulls, the Eagle, the Spread Claws, the Madness, the Sadness, the Gallows, and Counting and Talents. So you picked quite a bit out of that song just to play with. I still kind of walk within the same view, but there's a note to this. I like that second stanza. We are contemplating our precarious view, stare into the abyss, it will stare into you. With that heavy note of if you do stare into the abyss long enough, it does stare back into you, and you don't really like what you find in that view. So which that's what you kind of hit on with the next one, and reveal what is the cruelest madness. Quickly explain the sad man's sadness as streets turn into wet, marshy shallows, which all lead toward the reaper's gallows. If you stare long enough and worry about that which you, what turmoil you might be in, then you're hastening your own thoughts along that line to the reaper. And the idea of balancing sanity against moral treason. There is that note of, trying to keep true to yourself while walking that tightrope, because it is the view on one side to the other side is sharp and the decline is heavy. But giving up that morality of self as opposed to walking into what others think kind of gives you up to them instead of being yourself, and that's the razor's edge one walks.
Thank you very much, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, I guess we're coming back to you.
Okay, dope. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Dammit Dave, and I'm going to give it a read. So here we go. This is called Living on the Edge by Dammit Dave. I'm living on the cutting edge and standing on a narrow ledge that holds at bay for insanity and cues to my vanity. Emotions versus reasoning, the game's afoot, the play's the same. My drug is life, I'm one of a binge, and ever standing on the fringe. From logic into lunacy, each moment's an epiphany. What will I say? What will I do? I flip a coin and follow through. My brain is on a seesaw ride, as mania combats my pride. Absurdity is the last frontier, but I have grown to like it here. I stand astride a deep abyss, my angel sins, my demons hiss. I weigh my hope against despair and find they make the perfect pair. Excitement rules here on the edge, so I may fall right off the ledge. I'll ride this carousel till then and smile at what a ride it's been. And so on. Mm-hmm.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Randy, why don't we get you to comment before you head on out?
You did head on out. Good night, Randy.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Then it's Pam for you next.
All right. Well, yeah, I really like this one. I like how it's, as he said, the second stanza really sets the tone for me, where the line that says, emotion versus reasoning, the game's afoot, the play's the thing, my drug is life, I'm on a binge, and ever standing on the fringe. I like how this is about that war between the brain and the heart, that juxtaposition of the human spirit, where the mind struggles to understand, you know, exactly what's happening as you stand on that edge. I also really like, I stand astride a deep abyss, my angels sing, my demons hiss. I weigh my hope against despair and find they make the perfect pair. That part is really excellent because of the whole idea that it's about the angel and demon on the shoulders and suddenly realizing that they both make a really good point. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Everything Pam said.
You got me?
No. I thought this was an excellent take on the prompt and a wonderful piece all the way through. I really did, and Pam took the words right out of my mouth. I was going for the stanza, I stand astride a deep abyss. But I have to say, I loved his closing stanza as well. Excitement rules here on the edge, so I may fall right off the ledge. I'll ride this carousel for them and smile at what a ride it's been. So, you know, I mean, he tied it up really nicely with that last stanza. So I think he did a wonderful job. So thank you so much for sharing, Dave, and wonderful rhyme and meter as always. I feel like a broken record when I say that he reads poetry, but he really does a wonderful job.
Yes, he does. He's very strict on his thought and how he puts everything together. And I did like that second stanza, second line, the game's foot, the play's the thing, little Sherlock Holmes and Shakespeare thrown in. And then my drug is life, I'm on a binge and ever standing on the fringe. It kind of gives note to an adrenaline junkie. And then the next line, from logic into lunacy. And then you get that angle of the lunatic fringe, those that be on the outside. And again, it gets on it. My brain is on a seesaw ride as mania combats my pride. Absurdity is the last frontier. But I have grown to like it here. Still, when you're living on that edge, everything works hard, and you got to work harder at it. And excitement rules here on the edge, though I may fall right off the ledge. I'll ride this carousel till then. And smile of what a ride it's been. Again, that kind of note to an adrenaline junkie that, hey, I got to have it. It keeps me. It keeps me alive and keeps me going. Nicely done, Dave. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
You know, okay. Let me, nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. Let me see what I got. And that brings me back to you. I'll tell you what, we're going to, I'm going to have you read Time Tellers, right? So let me copy that.
Okie dokie.
So I can put it somewhere. There we go. Okay, ready when you are.
Him and Them by Time Tellers. Twisted fate, predestined fakes, the man hangs in a gallery. The clowns all dance and sing their wakes, forgotten lovers and wife's demanding alimonies. It's a step in that direction to the moon, you see, at the end of a finger, and yet with nothing left, you still smile and loiter, or is it linger? The storm is still around him. The seas rise and fall verbatim. No one really cares where he's gone, only his manners and temperate bonds. The coats are white, dog collars and chains hide behind wokes, while the favors of more choice tether him up, hold him down until he chokes. Stuck in the middle, refusing to pick, just common sense, an arsehole and a brick. Call him names, crush his games, hand out charity while propping up the blame. Support the immoral and fear their wrath. Join the congregation and sing a deep-felt love. Celebrate poverty, it keeps him in a job, and now he's down because he's a man. That's all gob. He says, we rush to the sides, swim to the shores, run to the signals, and sail amongst the stars, where we find nothing, because nothing found us. And if it isn't worth it, don't live it, to simply please them, because they will use it, take it, bend it, and manipulate it until you no longer recognize it. And boom. All right, Jean, what do you think?
I have no idea. But I'll tell you that I just picked up Naomi, so maybe she heard it, because I have to go back and read it real quick. So,
all right, yeah.
Hi, Naomi.
Hello.
Oh, Naomi. How you doing?
Hello. Good. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you very much. Did you get to hear this one by time, fella?
No, I'm just reading over it now. So give me a few seconds.
You say the third time's a charm, Rex. Sorry.
Yeah, you've been shuffled up on the deck now, and you got an ace in there.
Oh, geez. Well, it's a good thing for you that I'm good at bullshit and can just make something up. No.
Oh, my God.
No, actually, I had read this one earlier, and I really thought it had amazing imagery and metaphors. It was gritty and hard-hitting. It really made me think of the idea of being lukewarm. I used the phrase in my comment, an uncaring and placid society that tries to conform those who dare to think for themselves. I really like the of religious imagery of the man hanging in the gallery, hangs in a gallery, which makes me think of the crucifix and the idea of those people who think they pay for their sins through money and ceremony. I also particularly like the coats are white, dog collars and chains hide behind wokes, while the favors of more choice tether him up, hold him down until he chokes. You know, we think we're offering. What happens is people offer up what they think is freedom to people, but it's not freedom. It's just a mockery of what true freedom actually is. And if you don't fit into that box, then you're going to get ostracized. If I think that's the right word, probably not, but close enough. Anyways, those are my thoughts on this poem, and I thought it was very well done.
Well, thank you very much, ma'am. All right, Jean, what do you think?
Well, you know, I thought it was a clever piece, and I thought that there was a lot going on in it. You know, I won't take anything away from what Pam said, because I think she actually captured a whole lot in this that I get to grasp, because, you know, I read it in such a hurry. But it was nicely written, and the lines and such were pretty well done. So I have to say that, Time Teller, I appreciate the effort in this. And I'm sorry that I wasn't, like, on the money tonight. But I'm going to read it and try and give you a decent written comment, you know, that makes sense better than this. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Naomi, mm-hmm. You caught up?
Yeah, well, this I found this was really, you know, like a punch, a powerful punch, and, you know, he doesn't hold back from saying what he wants to say. We see it in, I agree with Pam, but, you know, the way he says it, we rush to the side, swim to the shores, run to the signals and sail among the stars, where we find nothing, because nothing found us. And if it isn't worth it, don't live it, to to simply please them, because they will use it, take it, bend it, and manipulate it until you no longer recognize it. So I think, you know, he ends with those strong lines. Very, very well put, this poem. And, you know, bravo, well written throughout. I just love also, it is a step in that direction to the moon you see at the end of a finger. That's amazing. That's amazingly well put there. But yeah, the of course, the stanza that Pam recited there, the coats are white with the dog collars. That's really, you know, strong emotions throughout, and a strong voice here to denounce all that he's saying here. So very, very well written, time teller.
Thank you, Naomi. Yeah, opening stanza gives you a hint where it's going. The man hangs in a gallery. The clowns all dance and sing their wakes. Forgotten lovers and wives demanding alimonies. And then it kind of gets into it a bit more. The storm is still around him. The seas rise and fall verbatim. No one really cares where he's gone. Only his manners and temperament bonds. There's that note of not standing up for who and what you are, and kind of bending the knee, so to speak, as to what the people around want, expect. Because she hits on them, support the immoral and fear their wrath. Join the congregation and sing deep felt love. Celebrate poverty, it keeps him in a job. And now he's down because he's a man. That's all God. He says, we rush to the side, swim to the shores, run to the signals, and sail amongst the stars, where we find nothing, because nothing found us. And it's kind of that note of how easy it is today to denigrate men and put them in singular spaces. Hey, you got to do this, you got to do that. If you don't, then you don't have this, you don't get that. And it's a notion of bringing men down to a point where they're crushed underfoot instead of being able to stand, saying, the hell with y'all. I don't really care what you want. You got to stand up and recognize who and what you are, and you don't let them tell you, hey, you are nothing except what we tell you what you are. And I think that's what Tom Keller is trying to get across. And thank you, TT. All right, Jean, let's come on over back to you.
Okay, well, the next piece I have is for Pam. So kind of to read this piece by Skunk Woman. I would appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. All right. And this is The Narcissist by Skunk Woman, and it goes like this. There once was a man who did boast of the extravagant parties he'd host, all the riches he possessed out of many loved himself the most. No death did he have, only pride about the beauty who stood by his side, how he sung sweet melodies and the motorcycles he did ride. In sports he excelled in everything. Freshman year he started first string. One of many achievements of his praises he would sing. But his ego, it kept swelling. He found himself quite compelling, and nobody wanted to listen to all the stories he was telling. Even though this man has great wealth, he was in impeccable health. No knocks at the door, because pride has left him by himself. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you. And Naomi, you get to kick us off.
Yeah, well. Well, you know, this is what happens and most narcissists, they end up being alone. You know, although this man had, he had great riches and, you know, he threw these great parties and everything, and he sang these sweet melodies, but, you know, he ends up alone in the end because no one knocks at the door because pride has left him by himself. So people got fed up by hearing him always talking about himself. But, you know, this is a, I love the flow of this. You know, it's a, it has a very lyrical quality to it. I think, you know, the whole piece, it flows very, very well. So bravo, Skunk Woman, well done. You know, it's kind of a tale she told here. So, wonderful tale told.
Thank you, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I just say I thought this was a great rhyme all the way through, and I love the great ending standards that you put in. Lessons learned, you know, is what I said. But his ego, it kept swelling. He found himself quite compelling, and nobody wanted to listen to all the stories he was telling. Even though this man has great wealth, was in impeccable health, no knocks at the door, because pride has left him by himself. Well said, you know, it's, sometimes it's just enough. You don't want to hear it anymore. You know, everybody can sit and say how wonderful they are, but you know, it's more fun when they show you. So I thought it was just nicely put together.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I really like this, and I like how, you know, it's all about the someone who's so full of themselves and showing off, you know, the beautiful woman by their side, their collection of motorcycles, and everything's about them that they fail to, you know, show interest and care for about other people's thoughts and life. And as Naomi pointed out, that, you know, that's what happens when you let pride get in the way, when you allow yourself to become the center of the universe. You soon find yourself alone. I did really particularly like, no depths did he have, only pride, about the beauty who stood by his side, how he sang sweet melodies, and the motorcycles he did ride. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. I thought her leaving the early step till the third stanza was kind of telling. In sports, he excelled in everything. Freshman year, he started first string. One of his many achievements of his praises, he would sing. That kind of hits on the note of always being the top dog, being coddled. Everything, got everything he wanted all in the moment because he was that good. In other words, there wasn't a strong enough male influence to sit there and tell him, yo, dog, you might be that good, but you need to hold yourself to yourself. Otherwise, you're going to crash and burn quickly. And then to start off with, they once was a man who did boast of the extravagant parties he'd host. All the riches he possessed, out of many, loved himself the most, which hits on that note of the view in the mirror, Narcissus himself. So this was a great piece on that level. Thank you, Skunk Woman. And Jean, we're coming back to you.
You know, I'm only kidding. Of course you're coming back. Miss Naomi, I'm going to ask you to read the next one by Betty Page.
Oh, yeah. My pleasure, my honor. Betty Page, High Wire Rides, 9/25/22. High upon the wire, revving my motorcycle, acrobatic rides, adrenaline rush, I'm addicted to danger, audience watches, ready to jump cliffs, dance across high-rise windows, gymnastics ballet, Evel Knievel, wild seductress on the stage, men say I'm the rage, intoxicating, pretty as I twirl and bend, applause at my end. Just like Houdini, disappearing as magic, pure melancholy, end poem.
Great read, Naomi. And Betty puts down, I once saw a show with a female motorcyclist who rode across a high wire. I've always wanted to do that ever since. All right, Dan. Dan, what do you got?
Yeah, I did enjoy that she put that in her AN. So I thought it was great that even if she hadn't, this poem really stands out on its own. Like, you can see the imagery, the high wire act going on. You could even see the costume the woman's wearing. I like how she brings us into this great sense of adventure and this woman who feels wild and free and confident and sexy. I really liked this all the way through, especially the nods to Houdini and Evel Knievel. I particularly liked, though, Adrenaline Rush, I'm Addicted to Danger, Audience Watches, Ready to Jump Cliffs, Dance Across High-Rise Windows, Gymnastics Ballet. You really get the persona of the character within that, right, and the idea of that addiction to danger. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I have to say, she's much braver than I am if she always wanted to do that, because I'm like, I don't think so. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I thought it was a fun piece in respect to all the different scenes that she kind of set up for us. But I got to say, I'm not sure why I feel this way, but I feel this piece really reflects that. I do, and I don't know how to explain it except for, you know, just from reading her for so long, it has that bit of Betty in it, you know what I'm saying? So I thought it was great, Betty, and thanks for sharing it with us. I think that is definitely, I don't know, it says something. It says something, because it does show me you somehow. I think it's great, so fun stuff.
Thank you, Jean. Yeah. And Naomi, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, that was a real pleasure to read this. And, you know, the stanza, intoxicating, pretty as I twirl and bend, applause at my end. You know, I think that really reflects the whole poem. You know, it twirls, it bends, it's full of magic, it's full of danger, you know. And, you know, yeah, it just twirls and bends and, you know, there's an applause at the end. So bravo, bravo, Betty Page. Yeah, another fantastic write by Betty Page here. I always love her writing. So bravo. Kudos to her.
Thank you, Naomi. That reminds me of Leon Russell's Tightrope. I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus life for you and me. So it kind of hits on that notion because you got to have a little bit of wildness in you to perform those, in this case, riding a motorcycle on a tightrope. Same thing, Evel Knievel jumping across canyons. And the stuff Houdini did, you got to have a little touch of daring in you because some of the stuff was quite crazy, like the being in a straitjacket and chains upside down in the middle of New York, hanging from a telephone pole or something. So those ideas, you got to have a little bit of lunacy in you to do those things. Because, hey, you never know when the final act draws to close. So nicely done there, Betty. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
And since we're speaking about Betty, a little birdie told me that Betty had a birthday the other day. So happy birthday, Betty. Well,
oh.
Popped into my...
Oh.
Happy birthday, Betty.
Got to be old enough to drink now. That's what I got to say. Just saying.
November, isn't it?
What's that on? What's
November, isn't it?
I don't know. The next piece I'm going to put up is called The Razor's Edge by Inner Sanctum, and I'm going to give that one a read. Okay. The Razor's Edge. The passing from childhood to maturity is a wedded razor's edge, slicing through our callow innocence, to carve a flood figure of an adult from a pure and vernal stone. Keen steel of knowledge and experience split the throats of inculpability. As sinless drops of crimson fall from a bloodthirsty tooth to form imperfect sanguine puddles, misshapen mirrors that replace the windows of youth like with warped reflections of the child who dies within. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, I really like this, you know. It's very a dark look at, you know, losing that innocence that we have as a child. But, you know, I just love the, you know, the metaphors that are in this, you know. The razor's edge, the pathway from childhood to maturity is a whetted razor's edge slicing through our callow innocence. And, you know, it's so true. Well, it was for me anyway. You know, I was brought up in a family that, you know, never fought, well, my father's a pastor. So, you know, this religious family, you know, that never swore, never said anything bad. And then I get out into the real world and it's like a slap in the face. You know, it's like, ooh, the world isn't like this, you know. So, yeah, and she really reflects it in this, you know, as sinless drops of crimson fall from a bloodthirsty blade. You know, they're just amazing right here on the loss of innocence and the loss of childhood. So super well written and, you know, great, great job here by Inner Sanctum. I really like this piece a lot.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. All right, Pam, what about you?
Yeah, this is an excellent dark write. I like how it's so visceral with its imagery and word choices. And I have to agree with Naomi. It's a wonderful write on the loss of innocence and the loss of youth. But also there's a feeling of the idea of hope being slaughtered, of that innocence, of that inner child. It's not just that you physically grow up and you see how the real world is, it's that it changes your spirit and kind of twists the mind until there's no hope left. And I really like this all the way through, but especially keen steel of knowledge and experience split the throats of inculpability as sinless drops of crimson fall from a bloodthirsty blade. There's almost the idea of the eagerness to kill off those who think like children. So excellent write and very well done.
Excellent, Pam. Thank you. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a great write and also a great take on the prompt. I thought it was an intriguing image of the passing from innocence to adulthood here. And it was well expressed, but so I thought it was nice work. And thanks for sharing with us, and I thank you.
Absolutely. That lead in from childhood to maturity is a whetted razor's edge. It kind of gives you the note of where it's going, then slicing through callow innocence. But the misshapen mirrors that replace the windows of youth, that kind of reminded me of those days when you went to the the arenas, the fun shows, and you walk in, you got the Tunnel of Love and all that crap, but you also have the funhouse mirrors, which warp and distort what you look like, and that's kind of a nice tone of thought right at the end of this, with warp reflections of the child who dies within. I thought that was a nice touch, because those who don't retain some semblance of the child within lose all perspective of the naturalness in life itself, the beauty that lies within. You get jaded. All right, Jean, we're coming back your way.
You know, well, for Jean's case, I'm going to put up the next piece by E.J. Cool called The Knowing. and we have an audio for that. Let me hit the button.
Linoleum by E.J. Cool. I am worn down linoleum, riddled with pockmarks and scars, like the drool-dripping pus boil fused to concrete steps. Her eyes are empty, rolling back, then forward, in an unsteady rhythm, off-kilter with the metronome of her emaciated torso. A ramshackle railing, frozen by the wastrel peak of winter, provides a wrought iron crutch to a tatterdemalion gutter snipe, numb on numb. I am asphalt pores on ice-weathered streets and graffitied buildings, dilated by sheets of sleet and rain, licking salt to magnify my pain. Every hole becomes a mouth sucking on the soggy scraps of life, like a child's thumb or a twitching cock, plastered with traces of seminal fluid and shed seed husks. Bitter wind bellows through rock-battered windows, molesting the forgotten topography of worn-down linoleum.
Great read, EJ. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, we're going to start with you.
All right. Oh, yeah, this is a powerful write. It's really visceral and just gritty imagery and metaphors. The second stanza with the off-kilter with her eyes are empty, going back then forward, and the emancipated torso makes me think of somebody suffering from an eating disorder. I have to say this is actually the second poem in the last 2 days that I've seen the word gutter snipe in. And it is definitely a great choice in word. This is to me the idea of looking at the ugliness of life, the ugliness of society, and all that the cement, the sidewalk sees, and all that, you know, it's just covered with the filth of life, and leaves this kind of lasting impression on the heart and on the mind. I also really like I am asphalt pores on icy weather streets and graffiti buildings. So it isn't just the people that it's talking about. It's the city itself that takes on this ugliness of its own. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Naomi, how about you?
Oh, yeah, this is, like, incredible metaphors, you know, for, like Pam said, just the ugliness of the society, you know, if it can be taken in so many different ways, whether it's, you know, from a personal point of view, just how life can wear down somebody, or whether it's, you know, the world that's, you know, just boiling in pollution right now, or, you know, it can be taken globally or more on a personal level, I guess. But, you know, she has some, like, striking imagery in this, like, every hole becomes a mouth sucking on the soggy scraps of life like a child's thumb or a twitching cock plastered with traces of seminal fluid and shed seed husks. Wow. You know, she went all out in the, you know, all through the but EJ Cool, I mean, the way she uses language, she never ceases to amaze me. You know, the way her style of writing and the way she can write so powerfully and so visceral and so, you know, she just seizes you from the first line onward right to the bottom. So just amazing, amazing right here by E.J. Cool. Another one.
Thank you, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a piece packed full of strong imagery and well-penned metaphors. I thought it was a great audio also, and I want to say thanks for sharing today. Great work.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. It's a brutal look at a singular person. I am worn down linoleum. That's a death look at what one views themselves as riddled with pock marks and scars, like the drool dripping pus oil fused to concrete steps. Again, reference to a self. And then, what was it? I am asphalt pores on ice-weathered streets and graffitied buildings, dialing by sheets of sleet and rain, licking salt to magnify my pain. And there was a couple of words in here that I really did. The use of wastrel was a nice touch, as well as tatterdemalion gutter snipe. That was a real interesting note of three words right there that I found very unique. Thank you very much, EJ. All right, Gene, we're coming back to you.
I knew he was going to say that, just in case anybody had any doubts. Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up is by Eric Trenton, and this one too has an audio. So let me hit the button.
Torch Song Trilogy. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, teach us to sing. Widget Wedge on Knife's Edge. Sledgehammer, sure-footed. Chimes, anvil, blacksmith. Bellows, balloon, fetid ale. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, teach us a new song. Incessant pneumatic compulsion, piston pump, reason's rump, rigorous frisk of vigorous reality, suck wisdom's teat. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, teach us a valid song. Be blowfish present, piranha voracious, disseminate knowledge. Pac-Man devour the megabyte highway. Turnpike, turn around, not an option. Burn the information highway tar. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, teach us to a cappella assonance. Caught up in oughts, fraught by naught, but upside-down crosses, holy cows, vowels, vowels, and discordant vowels. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, may I teach a new song? Bring the choristers, cherubim and seraphim, too many blips, bleep, flatliners, entropy, seeps down soiled drains, asphalt, cracks, paddywhack, whiplash, too darn painful. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, why won't you accept a new song? Widget wedge on the worldly knife edge, sledgehammer melts down time. Dali's persistence of memory, Rolexes or watches, the spare anvils, blacksmiths, bellows sag like deflated blowfish. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, who really appointed you? Be the flame, not the moth. Endgame opus, final curtain call. Be the flame, not the moth. Kings, queens, and dirt cheap rascals, be the flame, not the moth. Ringmaster, O Ringmaster, even at point blank range, I'll be the flame and you the moth. Intro.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And Naomi, what do you think about this?
Yeah, well, you know, from what I, from, you know, I always, of course, I'm always amazed at Eric's use of language, my gracious. But, you know, I get the impression that, you know, this is the same old a song that's being sung over and over and over again. And, you know, somebody wants, you know, to pierce and change that song, but it keeps coming back all the time. I get it from a, you know, marvelous, well-written stanza, widget wedged on worldly knife edge, sledgehammer melts down time, dallies persistent of memory, Rolexes, all watches, that's really neat, despair anvils, blacksmiths, fallow sag like deflated blowfish, that's really an amazing line there too. But, you know, all the way through, just amazing language used and, you know, metaphors and, you know, everything is in this poem, as usual, from Eric Svensson. So amazing, amazing write again by Eric Svensson here.
Thank you, Naomi. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this poem had a wonderful lyrical quality, especially with some of the slight rhyme and the alliteration and the repetitiveness of ringmaster, oh ringmaster. And what I like is this is the kind of poem that propels us forward. First, it's teach us to sing, and then we're not happy with that, so we want a new song. And then you give us a new song, but it's not what we wanted, so give us a valid song. And then it's that idea of almost, I get the idea of a God complex type thing, the idea of it almost thinks, I know it sounds weird, but it almost makes me think of like the idea of when back in the, what was it, the 80s of cloning the sheep Dolly, and how there's this discussion of how far is too far when it comes to playing God. And I really liked the reference to Dolly's persistence of memory and entropy seeps down soil drains, asphalt cracks, paddy whack, whiplash, too darn painful. You know, it's that idea there of we don't want to face the truth. The truth hurts too much, and so let's just, you know, cover it up. So really an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, ma'am. And Jean, how about you? Are you mutating?
I said, well, I guess I am. I was only one line in on my comments, but not so bad. You know, I thought there was another excellent take on this prompt. You know, Eric always comes in from a different angle than most everyone else, and I find that commendable,
mm-hmm.
You know, because he thinks outside of the box. And, I think it was well-penned. I thought the imagery was very cool because he's using the ringmaster. And, you know, I mean, to me, the ringmaster definitely nods to God, and I, you know, true, that's what Pam said in maybe different wording. It gives you that kind of a thought there. So I don't know. I thought there was a lot of great lines in this, and I wanted to thank and share with everybody. It was really nicely done. Clever work. Great to have you.
Thank you, Jean. It is done in a fashion of unfolding. Like the opening up, witched wedged on knife's edge, sledgehammer, sure-footed times, anvil, blacksmith, bellows, balloon, fetid air. It gives that notion of the industrial age taking hold. And then incessant pneumatic, not the industrial, but the iron age, so to speak, where the anvils are pounding out the metal, whether it's for horseshoes or war. And then the incessant pneumatic compulsion hits on that idea of coming into the industrialization angle. But then again, this next one, be blowfish present, piranha voracious disseminate knowledge, Pac-Man devour the megabyte highway, Turnpike turnaround, not an option. Burn the information highway tar. And there's that sort of how we progressed into this new age that's taking over everything. And then caught up in aught, fraught by naught, but upside down crosses, holy cows, bowels, bowels, and discordant bowels. It's on that idea of we've walked into a realm where there's a lot more things ever present than ever before right in your face. And then that, may I teach you a new song, bring chorus, this cherubim, the seraphim. And it's kind of that note of, can we walk it back a bit and go into what we actually know, need, and have want of, which is, of course, is the cherubim, the seraphim. And what else we got here? And again, the bellows sag like deflated blowfish kind of hits me on the idea of we're sagging beneath our own weight of the greed, especially with Rolexes or watches. And then the idea of be the flame, not the moth. Don't be the one gathering up to that mass conjunction of what's new to be had. Be the one offering up what's new to be had instead of everybody else. And there's not enough of the there's not enough flames, but way too many moths. Nicely done, Eric. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okie dokie. Rex, I'm for the next one up for you to read, and this one's by Pee-wee Poussin. So whatever you're ready.
All right. Razor's Edge by Pee-wee Poussin. Walking the razor's edge, balancing on a small ledge, seated on the head of a pin, swaying back and forth in the wind. Subconsciously misanthropic, tidings of the microscopic, seceding of this new hierarchy, mired in a bog of uncertainty. Living inside your pseudonym, remnant of what you've been, world being made to bleed, impaled by your realities. Walking the razor's edge, balancing on a small wedge, seated on the head of a pin, swaying around in the wind. Tumultuous tenuousness, fraying your will to resist. Ambiguous anger, one line, wine, winds, it's not your time. Wreckage of the hyperreal, all you've held on to steel. Gale force wind in your head, toppling from the razor's edge. And Paul. All right, Pam, what do you think?
First of all, great read there, Rex. I thought this was a wonderful rhyming poem by Pee-wee. It's very strong with imagery and metaphors. I really liked that it's about, well, to me, one of the first thoughts I had as I read through it the first time was the idea of the masks of depression and the idea of hanging in the balance between life and death. But I really like how this really seems about that idea of feeling like what life weighs you down. I particularly like subconsciously misanthropic, tidings of the microscopic, succeeding this new hierarchy, mired in a bog of uncertainty. You know, it feels like a personal life that's kind of spinning out of control, and they see because they're reflecting the turmoil that's going on in the world. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
This is a great piece. First of all, I like the repeat of stanza. You know, walking the razor's edge, balancing on a small ledge, seated on the head of a pin, swaying back and forth in the wind. You know, I thought that was a great repeat line, or stanza, what's the main line. The two stanzas after each, I thought were really intriguing and clever. You know, they both kind of held their own weight. And I say both meaning the combination of the two stanzas. I thought they were really well done. And it's a very strong poem, very, very well written. And I think it really expressed a lot of emotion in it with the wording choices and everything. So great job, Pee-wee, and thanks again for sharing, as always.
Thank you, Jean. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, this is really, really a strong write and very well written. I mean, you know, it fits the show so well because it has a marvelous rhythm and rhyme. and, you know, a lyrical quality because of the, you know, that could be a chorus of a song, you know, walking the razor's edge, balancing on a small ledge, seated on the head of a pin, swaying back and forth in the wind. You know, it could be a song made into a song is right, you know, and, you know, just talks about, you know, on the razor's edge between, you know, hanging between life and death, I think, or between, you know, going crazy or staying sane. Just amazing, amazing right here, Pee-wee. I applaud you for this right. Just, I just love this right all the way through. Gale force wind in your head, toppling from the razor's edge. You know, and excellent, excellent lines throughout. Bravo.
Thank you, Naomi. I think the first and the fourth stanza, they walk along the same lines, even the same language, but they hold two different thoughts. Oh, the opening one, walking the razor's edge, balancing on a small ledge, seated on the head of a pin, swaying back and forth in the wind. That gives a notion of ease in the moment, back and forth in the wind. Now, the other one, the fourth one, walking the razor's edge, balancing on a small wedge. Now, it's not the ledge, it's a smaller wedge. So you've got a smaller piece of that notion, seated on the head of a pin, swaying around in the wind. Now you don't have much of a balance. Now you're swaying around in the wind. And I think that third stanza holds itself as a notion to what the reality is. Living inside your pseudonym, remnant of what you've been, world being made to bleed, impaled by your realities. The idea of hiding behind the falsity of a name you give yourself while being out there toppling anything and everything you can. So it gives you the idea of a destruction without actually being present to delve into destruction. You're doing it from afar through the airwaves, through the binds of interlinks between computers. And then that last stanza, wreckage of the hyperreal, all you've held on to steel, gale force wind in your head, toppling from the razor's edge. Now you've already stepped into the abyss. You've gone too far, and everything's coming apart at the seams. Nicely done, Pee-wee. All right, Jean, we're coming up back to you.
Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Balance by Rain 474, and I'm going to give that one a read. See if I can make it big enough so I can read it. Balance. One, take a step, cried the sad man. Look down at the madman. It's time to do something. Load it down with your talent. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel down and pray for the guidance. Sit no more in the darkness. Do something to engage, because darkness can't put you in a cage. Load it down with your talent. Weave the dreams you want to achieve in the wings of darkest night, for you believe light is a hand distance apart. Because you're loaded down with your talents. Sense no more your charms. They know the tear of darkness. Just follow, as they said, loaded down with your talents. Can you still keep your balance, holding on to all your balance? Can you live on the knife edge, loaded with your talent badge? Loaded down with your talents, becoming virtuously gallant, tearing the depressive giant away from the land of threat. And poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Pam, we're coming to you, please.
All right. Well, great read there, Jean. And I have to say, I really like the way Rain 474 wove together his own thoughts and the song lyrics themselves in order to form a write that I thought really had a great lyrical quality and spoke really well on the idea of being weighed down with all of your talents, you know, the idea of having so much in this world that it becomes a burden. And it's the main idea being of learning to let go of that stuff that doesn't allow our spirits to be free. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Naomi, how about you?
I really like this again, you know, written like a song with a chorus. You know, don't let her, I think the message here is, you know, like Pam said, don't get weighed down, but, you know, don't be, maybe don't let yourself be your head blown up or you're becoming too proud of the talent that you have and not being, how could I say that, you know, let your pride get in the way of, you know, be staying humble and finding that balance between, you know, being loaded with your talent or being loaded down with your talent. So, you know, just an excellent read here all the way down. So bravo, bravo, Reigns 474.
Thank you, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think it would have made a lot of difference had I read it with the chorus in between each one of those stanzas. But I read it the way I saw it, so I didn't go back, like, scroll up to get the chorus and bring it down. And I think that that makes a huge difference in your, in the feeling you get from the piece. And I have to apologize for that. I had no idea that, you know, I was supposed to bounce up and down. Usually, if there's a chorus involved, normally I see it there in between. So my apologies on that. But, I mean, each one of them, can you still keep your balance holding on to all your balance? Can you live on a knife edge loaded with your talent badge? Then it, you know, would say, you know, only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel down and pray for the guidance. I thought it was clever, and I thought it was really a nicely penned piece. You know, as I said, I think because I read it the way I did, something kind of got lost in the interpretation. So, but I think it was nicely done. It's a great job.
Absolutely. Kind of hits on that notion, if you're hiding, if you're unwilling to engage the madness, then you have no right to actually complain about what comes along because you did nothing to push it back down, giving no hope to either yourself or those around you. Because if you got that much in the way of talent, then it should be shared, not hidden away, tucked away because you're afraid to open your mouth. The idea is you have to keep fighting. Even you might lose a round or two, but hell, the war is long and hard. So you got to stand up and take count of yourself as part of the struggle. Nicely done, Rain. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back on the
Okay. Pam, I'm going to ask you to read the next one for us.
Hey, Smokey. All right. This is When the Truth Just Can't Be by Darkened Auras, and it goes like this. Rumors say that he's a pedophile, just a creepy old pervert who's trying hard to get into a little Girl Scout skirt. He says he'll buy a box of cookies every single day if she'll keep him company as springtime fades away. Her precious smile and golden locks help him to remember his own Girl Scout daughter that was kidnapped last December. He reminisced when she would sell them and he'd buy a box each day, eat them by a picture of his wife as he'd watch his daughter play. Took his eyes off her one moment she was snatched in broad daylight. He never forgave himself, searching day and night. He cried and prayed and punched the wall, even wished on a four-leaf clover. But the case went cold when searchers said they looked for her all over. The last day she brought him cookies, he didn't seem the same. He asked her to come inside. He wanted to play a game. He brought her to the basement where there was a bedroom quite pristine with rainbows and unicorns, a favorite for any tween. He locked her in and said he'd be back, calling her his daughter's name. I'm Emily, not Sophie, she tried to loudly claim. As he passed the TV, according to a news source, was a horrible discovery that sent his mind on this course. a little girl had been found and dug up from the dirt. Reports had said that she'd been physically and sexually hurt. His eyes had seen the picture, his daughter Sophie dead, but he couldn't let Emily go. She matched her in his head. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Naomi, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, well, you know, this is a very powerful write. You know, I wonder if this was based on a true story, but, you know, maybe it came up in the news or something. But, you know, this is, you know, a man basically losing his mind when his daughter was kidnapped and now trying to replace her with somebody that, you know, another little girl that in his head becomes his daughter that he lost. So, yeah, a wonderful tale of somebody that, you know, is just so normal and just loses it, you know. And I think you can take this as a message that maybe, you know, it can happen to anybody, you know, that goes through a trial or, you know, a big emotional impact. It depends on, you know, your personality, just how strong you can be to go through these horrible situations, I think, and deal with it. But, yeah. A lot of people would lose their mind. So, amazing right here by Darka Doris.
Thank you, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I have to say, this is a painfully sad and disturbing little story. You know, and I don't mean disturbing in the fact that it was like, it's totally devastating. It might be that far, but I thought it was just... an interesting case, and I thought, wow, you know, and then as we, you know, we went further down, I said, okay, but I read the AN, and it says, I hope this is okay for the contest. It's like trying to walk that fine line of grieving the daughter you think has just been taken, and trying to converse with someone that reminds you of them, and finding out your daughter's dead, and your mind making you think they are them. So it's an intriguing concept. And I think in that respect, she did a good job putting it all together. Definitely a different take on the prompt. And a great take as well. So thank you very much, Mark and Ori. Intriguing.
Thank you, Jean. And Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, well, as always, it's a wonderful rhyming poem from Darkened Auras. I like that she takes us into this story that has such a raw reality to it, because these are things that happen in the world. Children get lost and kidnapped and abused, and life, it can just be so horrifying. And I have to agree with Phil. It was great that she did a different take on the prompt. I like that here, like many of the other poems, we see the idea of someone, I shouldn't say many, but at least a couple of the other poems, we see the idea of someone falling into madness. But here, were introduced into the reason. And I like how there's this idea to me that this man who started out as one of the good guys became so caught up in his world of madness and grief that he himself became one of the bad guys by locking this little girl in her room because he could no longer tell reality. And I have to say this one is just really pulls at the heartstrings and is emotionally hard-hitting. So very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you very much. This walks a lot of emotional tides, so to speak. And although there is a note to madness, I think it more delves into the idea of, because you've got to hit on, he'll buy chocolates every single day. She keeps him company as springtime fades away. You get that note of really sadness there. And then the thought of who she was, her precious smile and golden locks. help him to remember his own Girl Scout daughter that was kidnapped last December. So you get a notation to what's going on with him. It's not madness in the moment. He's seriously unhappy because he also mentioned that Ethan by a picture of his wife who has also passed, and the fact that she never got to live this, which is a good thing, but he's taking on the full brunt of that load. So you're looking not so much as into the madness, but his dissociative disorder working its way into the mind from the point where it takes over as that note of she is her in his mind now. And even with that note of the last two stanzas where his daughter Sophie dead, but he couldn't let Emily go, she matched her in his head. He's gone full into that dissociative disorder where this is the new reality now because he can't face that which he just experienced on the TV as well as the years he had already experienced with the fact that everybody had given up. So he's gone full on over the edge and into his own little world where she is still here now, but it's someone else as that part of his world, which is really sad. Nice, a different piece there, D.A. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. Where would you like to go now?
Actually, I'm going to come back to you here. So here we go. This is by Stuart Monroe. Sued by a sponge
up a block of flax by Stuart Monroe. Sued by a sponge up a block of flax, I looked increased on the apple tree yard. On the edge of a seat, with inevitable twists, I had no clear motive on a holiday bucket list. Knickerbocker glory, and I nearly cut my wrists. I was reading Ulysses, but it wasn't 1922. I was praying five times a day, but I'm not Fra Angelico, sprinkling stardust, looking for a rehearsal place. Investigating a snowflake in a breeze-blocked building, Xander Rose was cutting a toenail secretly. Parquet flooring with a chilly upstairs bathroom. I was very distinctive with a second wife who was deaf. Sitting in the corner, drawing plants, watching Bonanza. Sitting with my feet in an oven, a winter of windows. I wanted to be immortalized in plastic bricks. My brother had climbed Kilimanjaro since childhood. I had been concerned intensely by a skincare regime. And boom. All right, Pam, what do you think about that?
You know, I have to say that was a great read, and I am really becoming a fan of Stuart Monroe's poetry. I think he's got a wonderfully unique style. I like how he described the kind of madness of life and going through life in a very surrealistic feel that fit well with the lyrics of the song prompt. I really thought as there was that, like the stand of Knickerbocker Glory and I nearly cut my wrist, I was reading Ulysses, but it wasn't 1922. I was praying five times a day, but I'm not Friar Angelico. Has that idea of somebody searching for themselves and trying to figure out who they are. I also like that it was great all the way through, but again, the end really grabbed my attention. My brother had climbed Kilimanjaro since childhood. I had been concerned intensely by a skincare regime. You almost get the idea of one son who struggles through life, one child that struggles through life and another who really hasn't got beyond thinking about their outward appearance, really has this shallowness to themselves, and they're trying to, it just feels like that they brings you back to the part of the poem where they're talking about, trying to figure out who they are. And so excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, you feel like somebody like Pam said, they're kind of falling apart here. you know, trying to find themselves. You know, I just love some of these lines, like the one, of course, the knickerbocker glory, and I nearly cut my wrists. That part I really liked. But also sprinkling stardust, looking for a rehearsal place. So a place to, I guess, you know, to rehearse himself, to practice being himself so that he can become, finally find his place and find his place in the play, which is the play of life. But, you know, just amazing, amazing, a unique way of writing, and that's captivating and very creative. And, you know, I like this piece very, very much. Love the lines.
Thank you very much, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I found it pretty interesting as I was reading it. I'm going, okay. It was definitely the thoughts of someone walking that fine line between, you know, together and not so together, I would say. You know, more so on the not so together side of things, in my opinion. I think it was a very clever take on the prompt. It was great work, and I really enjoyed it. Very well done. All these obscurities, you know, throughout the poem are really absolutely so nice work, and thank you for sharing, Stuart.
Thank you, everybody. I like the abstract note in this, and it kind of hits on my thought of loneliness. You look at that second line, I looked and creased on the apple tree yard. The apple is capitalized. So I'm thinking he's on an Apple computer on the edge of a seat with inevitable twists. I had no clear motive on a holiday bucket list. Knickerbocker glory, and I nearly cut my wrist. Knickerbocker glory. Now, I think he'd come across a site where there was nothing but knickers or something less. And that kind of sent him off on a, oh, God, that's not what I wanted, so to speak. Because then I was reading Ulysses, but it wasn't 1922. The thought with Fra Angelico is an Italian Renaissance painter, sprinkling stardust, looking for a rehearsal space. So the idea that there kind of hits me with a little bit of religious note. And Xandra Rhodes is a some kind of fashion designer. Was cutting her toenails secretly. I found that funny. Parquet flooring with a chilly upstairs bathroom. And then, again, that note to sitting in the corner drawing plants, watching Bonanza, sitting with my feet in an oven, a winter of windows. So there's something lonely and cold about this. I want it to be immortalized in plastic bricks. My brother had climbed Kilimanjaro since childhood, and I'd been concerned and tested by a skincare regime. So he's a very lonely guy, this one is. And you're right, this is a very different look into something that kind of really stands out. I like it. Thank you, Stuart. All right, Jean.
Okay, Naomi. Well, I have Naomi hands up next. So whenever you're ready, Naomi, it is there.
Okay. So I took a line from the take a look down at the madman. Looking at a madman, I walk past a mirror on the wall, glass, wearing a frosty negligee, leaving a transparent area just large enough to get a small peek at the pale, eerily quiet on the other side. My tongue is parched and pinned in place like a dried house moth. Each of my taste buds missing the sweet in my sound, as only leftover quivers of faint light shine through the gape in my teeth and mumbled voices. The Cheshire, we're all mad here, Dorothy whispering. Toto, I have a feeling we're not insane anymore. while on repeat. In a mad world, only the mad are sane. Akira Kurosawa hums over and over again. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Pam, we're coming to you, voice.
Yeah, that was a wonderful read. I love how creative you were with your imagery and metaphors and your cultural references to like the Cheshire Cat and Dorothy and Toto and Akira Kurosawa. You know, it's funny because I don't know if you meant it this way, but from the title of that first stanza, I walk past a mirror on my wall glass wearing frosty negligee, leaving a transparent area. I couldn't help but think about the character, the killer transvestite in Silence of the Lamb, who had the small dog and was like,
Buffalo Bill,
put lotion in the basket. And I thought, wow, Naomi's getting pretty wild and dark with this. But no, it really, to me, the main message that I get from this is go delving into the realm of madness. And it's a dark and haunting look at the realization of what you thought was madness is reality, and what you thought was reality is madness. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Well said, Pam. Jean, how about you?
Well, Naomi, I have to say there's a lot of clever lines in this piece. Excuse me. I thought it was a great write, and I thought that it was also a great take on the thumb. Great imagery and thoughts all throughout. I thought it was well expressed. There was just so many little notes here. You know, the Cheshire Cat screeching, we're all mad here. Dorothy whispering, and this one cracked me up. Toto, I have a feeling we're not insane anymore. I went, okay, you know. It was something about it just kind of, because the lines were familiar. And I think that it just made it that much better. I think the reference to the dried house moth was clever because it's relatable to most everyone. But really nicely done. Absolutely. So nice work. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Jean. It reminds me of it's a mad world. Now, you start off almost passé, so to speak. I walk past a mirror on my wall, glass, wearing a frosty negligee, leaving a transparent area just large enough to get a small peek at the pale, eerily quiet on the other side. Now, I like that. The glass itself wearing a frosty negligee, as though it's so ancient that the outside of the mirror itself has frosted to the point where it's opaque. You can't really get a look through it, but you get a peek in what's to the middle of the glass. So you have to look carefully into that. And then you end up with my tongue is parched and pinned in place like a dried house moth. Each of my taste buds missing is sweet in my sound. I like that thought for the kind of shock, surprise in the moment, going dry mouth because what you're viewing as you're looking into that mirror. As only leftover quivers of faint life shine through the gap in my teeth and mumbled voices. Now, there's a clever look at how madness can stare you back in the face as if you're looking back into the abyss itself and it stares at you. Now, I like the Cheshire Cat screeching, we're all mad here, kind of that notation of, you stepped into our world and now you're part of it. And I like that thought with the split on insane. We're not insane anymore, literally, offering up that note. Yeah, we're not in the place of sanity anymore. We're in where the world walks on a different level. And I like that thought with in a mad world, only the mad are sane, which is true because everybody in the nut house claims they're sane. Well, actually, they are because they found their escape. The insane ones are the ones on the outside who keep looking to find a note of sanity, realizing, hell, we're never getting out of here alive.
Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome.
All right, Jean, we're back on you. But you got to unmute.
Well, I don't know why she's not talking, but I do see that she put my poem up. So I am guessing that I should probably read that. And yeah, right. Smart ass. Okay. This is Cement Edges of Windsong Font, and it goes like this. Queen of cement edges and marble guardians, the topsy-turvy twist mid-stumble wings spread was the antidote for her kingdom. She carved these words in windsong. We live on the far-reaching arm of unfavored times, tracing the paraded steps of pageant princesses upon glass ceilings. The stars weep apple cores of a midnight masquerade. Before you bite down, ask yourself, did I waltz across bleeding slippers begging the executioner's axe? Everyone wants to play instruments strung across the heavens with a clumsy backhand casting knuckle bones. Then before walking a trail of dust between eyelashes, she offered these warnings. Don't write the song if you can't keep the tune. Don't be the merchant if you can't afford the notes that tinder the fall. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you?
This was just amazing. Of course, like always, Pam, in your writing, the metaphors and the imagery are just, out of this world. Queen of cement edges and marble guardians, the topsy-turvy twists mid-stumble wing spread was the antidote for her kingdom. You set the stage right there in that stanza right there. And I just love the way you captured the whole song in this, right? And don't write the song if you can't keep the tune. Don't be the merchant if you can't afford the note that tinder the fall. So it's just amazing, right? And I just love that you put, knuckle bones in there. Just amazing. Between eyelashes, she offered these warnings. Just amazing from the title all the way down, all the way through. Amazing, amazing right here.
Thank you, Naomi.
Nicely said, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
Well, Pam, your work is always so incredible. You have so many wonderful metaphors and such imagery in this. I was trying to pick a spot to pluck out and speak on, but, everything just, I think that it's all pretty incredible. She carved these words in windsong font. We live on a far-reaching arm of unfavored times, tracing the paraded steps of pageant princesses upon glass ceilings. Really? Whenever you come up with this stuff. And whatever you've got, whatever you're taking, I want some. That's what I'm going to say. I find it incredible that you put this stuff, I don't want to say out of thin air and make it seem like it's trite because it's not. But you just kind of pluck this out and it just works. And I find that always amazing. So, a wonderful piece and a great, I think it's a great take on the prompt. It's just intricate as hell, really. And nice job.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well said, Jean. She carved these words in windsong font. Kind of offers up a note to something light and airy, something maybe wistful. And we live on the far-reaching arm of unfavored time, so kind of gives a note to the distressing angle of things. But tracing the paraded steps of pageant princesses upon glass ceilings, pageant princesses, the little girls who promised everything, and the glass ceilings are going to break, but the glass ceilings never come down. The Midnight Masquerade and the Apple Corps, there's something a little rotten with the Apple Corps and the Midnight Masquerade, because you ask, before you bite you down, ask yourself, did I waltz across bleeding slippers begging the executioner's act? There's an ominous tone in that. And I like the casting Knucklebones. That's rolling the dice. And then you walk back into that almost fairy angle, walking a trailer just between eyelashes. She offered these warnings. So it's kind of a note to be careful of what you wish for. I might be able to sprinkle this stardust within your eyes, but if you don't write the song, don't write the song if you can't keep the tune, because somewhere down the end, that long fall is going to squash you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rex, and thank you for the inspiration.
You're welcome.
3 years ago, you inspired it with your prompts, but, you know, hey, it's for tonight.
Yeah, that was for a bunch. That was for a bunch of songs. This was for a singularity.
Yeah, I know that, but it just so happened that the two songs I wrote to, one of them happened to be Knife Edge, and so that's why it worked for this contest. Not contest,
correct.
Sorry, this show. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
What have we got going for Twisted Tuesday?
Oh, no, we got one more poem left.
Oh, we do?
One more.
I thought that was it.
One more.
Oh.
Nope,
okay.
One more. And this one's for you, Rex.
Oh, okay. Raise the Bridge by Mark Loopy. One thing I know, on the edge, the blood will flow, always crossing, me to you, always crawling, old to new, held up by my chains. So, bright razor, break my veins. Bright razor, touch my lips, into the gulf below it drips. Another transition, always reckoned by the failure of the second. With the hope that I'll succeed on the edge until I bleed. Bright razor, as I go, blood is mostly what I know. End poem. A bit of darkness in there. Pam, why don't we start with you? Pam, are you mutating?
I think she stepped away.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Naomi, how about you?
One thing I know, on the edge, the blood will flow. You know, he recognizes that he is on this edge, that he is walking this bridge on this razor. And, you know, he's so close. Bright razor as I glow, blood is mostly what I know. So he is embracing that darkness. I think that darkness that inhibits him. This is a very, a very dark right here again. So bright razor, break my veins. Bright razor, touch my lips into the gulf below it drips. You know, amazing lines, amazingly dark. And so well written. Bravo, Mark Loopy.
Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
Oh, yeah, I think Mark did a great job with this. It was a great brevity and nicely penned. So kudos for him. Wonderful job.
Yeah, there's a note in here. Always crossing, me to you, always crawling, old to new. There's kind of a note to someone who breaks out the razor and a strop. And is one in a barbershop. But then again, he also hits on the note of touch my lips, break my veins. So there's a darkness to wanting, but not actually doing. So there's that note to cutting that walks in here as well. Because he hits on the back end, bright razor as I go, blood is mostly what I know. And it hits on that notion of one who used a straight razor as a cutting tool be in control of the moment, so to speak. Nicely done, Mark. Thank you very much. Well, I guess we're at the back of things now. We'll do this again next Sunday evening, as I've got, we're doing Rocktober come next, Rocktoberfest for next Sunday, and we'll see you there for that. But what you got going, Gene? What's Twisted Tuesday?
I think I'll start with tomorrow. Tomorrow we have the Garden of Enlightenment with Lou Wild Dove, and followed by After Midnight with Rex and Pam. What you got going on? That's the question.
Oh.
See?
Bring Me Your Lizard King for After Midnight.
Your Lizard King is coming out on Monday night, Tuesday morning.
Yes.
Look out, everybody.
Bring Me Your Lizard King.
Now, Naomi, what do you have going on Tuesday?
Yeah, well, what do I have on Tuesday? Oh, yeah, I have Life is Art Part 2, and then I have a contest that I ran with eight spots on the word embedo. So it was a new word I discovered, which I really found cool. And, and I'm also doing Wednesday, I guess. Am I? Yeah, I think so. I'm doing Wednesday with a prompt that inspired by Pam, and you know I just found a lot of prompts, art of seduction. So that contest filled up really well. Like we have some such amazing rights in that contest. So I'm really looking forward to both of the shows.
Very
and
cool.
Then, of course, keeping it brief on Wednesday. But, Wednesday, keeping it brief.
Well, you're actually off the hook for Wednesday night because Gray has the show for 9:28. You're good till 10.
Oh.
So that's good.
Oh,
that means you're prepared ahead of time.
I made a mistake.
That's all right. That's all right. I think Gray had this week. I had to go over look.
Yeah, I get mixed up in the
date. Yeah, so then Wednesday, keeping it brief, followed by Gray Eyes with The Art of Seduction, followed by the Headliners Ball, and I'm not too sure who Jeremy is highlighting this week.
I think it's
so
Delina and Arcana Amul.
No, that's Halloween. That's the end of October. We have, I think, Mamia and Eugene M. That's Eugene's on Rex, and I want to hang out. I'll give Rex time, because Eugene is going to make an appearance, just so you know. And that should be a great show. And Thursday, I believe, we have Richard Weissman and in our Craft and Sewing Arts. Followed by Cam with Break Lunch here, and then we're back to Open Poetry on Friday. So I hope everybody will pop in and join some of the shows and visit with us.
Yeah.
We all love coming.
Of course.
And,
we'll be there. I'll be
awesome,
there.
Awesome. Rex, wonderful show tonight. Great topic.
Yeah.
Great poetry.
Thank you, everybody.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I think that about sums it all up for tonight.
Yeah,
12 and I'm still talking about shows. But thanks for calling in, Naomi. Always good to have you around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Good night,
Naomi. Thank you.
Okay, good
Bye.
Night. Thank you.